Sports with Reed Wilkins on Edmonton Sports Leader, 630 Chad.
Got a message here from Gator, one of my buddies I got to know when I was working in Lloydminster. He says, who was the Edmonton Sled Dogs' first head coach? I said, I don't know. Even Google didn't have an answer. He said it was the head coach of the Nate Oaks at the time, Don DePoe, Edmonton Sled Dogs of Roller Hockey International, as our fun topic tonight. Your favorite, now defunct or moved to another city, Edmonton-based minor pro sports team. This is the list we have. So my list and then three teams that got added onto it. Well, I guess I added one myself. Drillers, Skyhawks, Trappers, Cracker Cats, Capitals, FC Edmonton, Energy, Chill, Rush, Aviators, Brickman, Roadrunners, Chimos, Sled Dogs, and Eagles. That's pretty good. We have the Memorial Cup first game starting in half an hour. We'll keep you updated on that one. The Blue Jays playing tonight as well against the Twins. It has been a tough go for the Blue Jays lately. And they are scoreless with the Twins in the bottom of the second inning. Brendan Escott is joining me here in studio. This is how Dave described you on our lineup. Host Edmonton Elks football on 630 Ched. Oilers Now producer. Oilers Radio Network contributor. And sports anchor Chelsea on Ched. Do you do all those jobs?
And more.
Wow, I didn't even know.
Well, you know what, actually, that kind of sums it up.
I wouldn't have been able to go that detailed on what you do here. I just like you, the guy that puts up with me.
Yeah, when you're in the building,
also important.
Most of us tolerate you. Some of us more so than others.
I'm highly tolerable. That's how I'm often described.
Our desks face one another, so it's either civil or, I don't know, it would be like a game of Battlefield the way it's set up.
But
with
we
the
could
big
play
partition.
Battlefield. There's a cubicle wall in between us, but we can hear each other quite easily.
That's true.
If one of us isn't on the thing, on a headset on our computers, you're quite interested in the Memorial Cup.
My hometown, Kamloops Blazers, the host city, and you know what, I'll be here in town in Edmonton calling that football, not calling it, but previewing and then recapping that football game tomorrow instead, but it's so much pride even just seeing the old building there, which they've done clearly a ton of renovations to the Sandman Center in Kamloops and downtown, and yeah, I guess even having been away 6 years, it almost brings a tear to my eye, Reed, to see all the effort that's gone into showcasing my hometown and some pretty darn good hockey that we'll see as well.
Well, you won't miss a Kamloops game tomorrow. You'll miss Peterborough in Seattle.
That's right.
So you're okay for tomorrow.
No, I'm gonna haul butt home after I leave here and see if I can't catch puck drop for
Kamloops
this one.
Kamloops and Quebec.
Patrick Waugh's Quebec Remparts.
Yes. Is he going to the NHL? What's going on?
That's what the word on the street is. You know, the street that I hang out on that I hear these types of things. it sounds like the New York Rangers may have interest. I mean, if you're going to be Patrick Waugh and make the jump to the NHL, why not Broadway? I mean, you're going to do it. You do it big, right? So, now, to the fact that he's got the temperament to even have gotten this far coaching a junior hockey team actually quite surprises me. So,
what if Patrick Waugh's great games was in 1986 when he was a rookie, game three of the Wales Conference Final. I think the shots were 11-2 in overtime for the Rangers, and Waugh was spectacular. I want to say Mike McPhee scored the game-winning goal. I can't remember for sure, but that was when Waugh burst onto the scene.
See, you don't remember who scored the game winner, but you do remember the performance of the goaltender. I think that's telling.
Well, he was incredible. I mean, he won the Conn Smythe, and then he won the Conn Smythe for the Canadiens in 93 when they went 10-1 in overtime. They played 20 games. To me, that's still one of the craziest stats of all time. Of course, it's the last year Canadian team won the Cup still. The Canadiens played 20 playoff games. 11 of them went to overtime. They won 10 of those. They lost their first overtime game to the Nordiques. So they won 20 games and won the Stanley Cup. The Toronto Maple Leafs played 21 games, did not make the Stanley Cup final. Because the Canadiens won a series in six. The Canadiens had a six-game, a four-game, a five-game, and a five-game. And the Leafs had 3 sevens and got eliminated by Los Angeles.
All of this happened the year before I was born.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, stuff happened before I was born, too.
Well, I'm just putting it into context for the fact that I've lived an entire life having not experienced a Canadian NHL Stanley Cup champion. And
that
I won't
is
turn,
pretty crazy.
I won't turn this entire thing into that, but I'm about to turn 30 here. And, you know, tick-tock. But I would suggest that Edmonton has a pretty good chance. Toronto, we'll see what happens this offseason. I don't know. But they've got some pieces in place. We'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Memorial Cup. So did you go to a lot of Blazers games?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was, you know, it was a thing to do. I mean, you got to remember Kamloops only recently became a city of around 95,000 people or so. It was, you know, 85,000 when I was growing up. So there's not much else to do but go to a junior hockey game. And when you grow up as a little hockey player, it's the place to be. It's the place to see kids from other schools. And unfortunately, for much of my tenure, they weren't particularly strong. I did get to see Devin Dubnyk in his junior years. J.C. LaPon had a stint on the Canadian junior team, but it's really only recently that the program has come back around like gangbusters, to the point where you've got some draft-eligible talent really all through it, like Logan Stankoven, for example, who looks like he's ready to make the jump to pro with Dallas next year.
Is Seattle the favorite?
I would suggest so.
I mean, Peterborough, I mean, I know they won the O, but they were a lower seed in the O, so you wonder if that catches up to them at some point.
Perhaps. You know, but yeah, that momentum can carry you through as well. I just look at all the trades that Seattle made, sort of assuming the risk that said incredible NHL prospect wouldn't come back down, and then they all came back down. So here's Dylan Gunther, here's Brad Lambert, here's Luke Prokop, and a team that was good has turned into absolutely fantastic, if not historic. So I suspect that going in, they'd be the betting favorite. If you listen to Oilers Now on these airwaves, you've heard Bob Stauffer predict that this final of this tournament should be an all-Western League final, with Kamloops making it there as well.
Yeah, which would be pretty fun. Okay, so we're talking about some minor pro sports teams in Edmonton that have come and gone. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Kamloops is not that big, under 100,000.
Right.
But was there anything, some rookie league baseball? I mean, do they have a team in the league the Riverhawks are in, or some sort of semi-pro soccer or something like that?
Well, they have the North Paws, which have only been founded since I've been living in Edmonton within the last few years. So that's a pretty new thing. They have the university there, right? So university teams, that's kind of where the sports came from, if not for the Blazers, who have been a staple there for 40-some-odd years. So I don't know how to explain it other than... I think most things that come to Kamloops end up staying, and most things that start out in Kamloops end up leaving.
They got any malls there?
They have a few. One of them's worth going to, Aberdeen Mall. Depends what you're looking for.
I'm looking up the West Coast League now, because that's the league with the Portland Pickles.
Yeah.
Right, that the Riverhawks play in?
Yep. There, not only are there some elite names of teams in that league, but some elite baseball players have come out of the West Coast League. So I know the Riverhawks and Kamloops actually open up their seasons against one another sometime the third week of June or so. And I will definitely be down at Remax Field to check that one out.
They got some good, like the North Paws, that's a cool name.
Yep.
The Yakima Valley Pippins, the Wenatchee Apple Sox, the Walla Walla Sweets. The Springfield Drifters, they don't really, they just kind of line up however they want.
There, whatever. But some great names of cities in Washington, clearly.
Yeah. All right. So, you're doing Elks tomorrow.
Yeah, I did a lot of prep on Elks today, so if you want to know anything, I could tell you.
That's one of your jobs, according to the lineup here. All right, so what's Cornelius is going to play quarterback?
That's correct.
How long do you think?
Well, it could be a series. It could be a quarter. It depends on the trajectory of the game. To me, they're looking to get as much chemistry with this wide receiver core as possible. It's the first offseason for Cornelius, where he's been able to prepare his body and his mind as though he was going to come in as the starter. And the tools that they have implemented around him, I almost sound like I'm gassing this team up. I feel silly. But in reality, a receiver core that has four guys that could break off 1,000-yard receiving seasons, realistically, when you think of Eugene Lewis, who had 1,300 last year, Stephen Dunbar Jr. comes over off 1,000 yards with Hamilton, Kyron Moore has the speed to do it, 100%. 100%. I'm not sure they're going to play him in a manner where he could reach that. And Dylan Mitchell had 637 receiving yards in 8 games last year. He was on pace for 1,000 yards, too. So, you know, that factored in with a running game that can function with Kevin Brown. He was on pace for 1,000 ground yards last year. And there's a lot of weaponry for him to go to. So I think that they don't have to rely too much on his arm. They don't have to force errors. They've got different guys that can take over. And I'm very excited to watch this play out tomorrow afternoon.
All right. So Brown's the running back.
Yeah.
He's back. Is Shannon Brooks in the mix, do you think?
Yeah, well, they were looking for somebody to establish themselves behind Kevin Brown. Is there a thunder to the lightning? Is there sort of a hammer to this mix? And Shannon Brooks was fantastic against Calgary. He had 11 carries for 72 yards against the Stamps. He was difficult to take down in between the tackles. And Kevin Brown's somebody that is not only effective in the passing game out in space, but he's good off tackle. So if you've got somebody who can run it right up the gut and sort of slam it into the mouth of the defense, like Brooks proved that at least through one game that he could do, that bodes well. So we'll get another look at him. He starts, it'll be Brown starting, but Brooks dresses once more out of the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers.
That's another good name. All right, so just back to quarterback, and I spend a lot of time on the quarterbacks because it's important. So Trey Ford is going to play.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow. Is there how many quarterbacks are dressing, and who else could be? Because it's so weird how they handle the quarterbacks now. Like you said, he might not even play a half, Cornelius.
Yeah, exactly. How many reps do they want him to get in with guys? Like, as soon as the first team comes out, as soon as Eugene Lewis and Dylan Brooks aren't the guys getting thrown to, I suspect Cornelius will come out of the game. So maybe it's only a couple or three series in that sense. They've got 4 quarterbacks dressed. You mentioned Trey Ford. Kyle Oxley is going to dress as well. He got the start last week, Monday. And Khalil Tate, who was taking some reps, a real mobile threat. No Jarrett Daigie, despite an excellent performance, 137 air yards for Daigie, but he was nicked up in that loss to Calgary, so he played like they won.
So what position is Kyle Oxley going to be?
They've locked him in at quarterback this year.
He's not doing anything at receiver.
That's correct. They're allowing him to focus. So he will be, in my opinion, the short yardage guy. He had 6 or 7 rushing touchdowns last year in the short game. So that'll be an area of focus for him for sure.
Okay. Well, that's interesting to me. Okay. So that's the offensive side of the ball. On defense, I know you and I were talking just in the sports department a few days ago. Could have some good linebackers. And they got a couple new DB, well, one especially a DB that should be really good. Purifoy?
Yeah, Lucius Purifoy. He was, I think, in the top 25. I was looking earlier today in tackles last year, total tackles, up over 65 of them. But this is a player who was an all-star last year. The only reason he wasn't re-signed by BC is because he was due a roster bonus back in the winter that BC wanted to save money to allocate all they could toward Nathan Rourke for. So here comes Lucius Purifoy. Familiarity with Chris Jones from their time together in Saskatchewan. He's an impact player, and this is somebody that I think could slot in at halfback and be a real difference maker in an area that I think needed the most of a difference made after last season. They scored the fewest points in the league, Reed, and they allowed the most against. That's a pretty tough differential.
And the secondary gave up too many big plays, from what I remember.
Exactly. So they returned Scott Hutter to play a free safety, the Canadian. That's, in all likelihood, who's going to end up starting. He was good last year. Probably better than he had to be because he was getting called upon so often. But then you push Purifoy to a spot that, say, Daron Carter would have been playing last year, and you expect a big uptick in performance there.
Okay, and who's kicking? Is this the British guy?
Yeah, it's still Dean Faithful, who he missed a kick last week of about 35 yards, but don't let that fool you, because in the lead-up to that kick, the set man, who I think was Hutchins in the play, Greg Hutchins, he put the ball down. or he made his hands like he was going to put the ball down. He looked, and he was a yard in the wrong spot, so he had to shimmy himself over, all while the play clock is ticking down, remember. So it wasn't a proper fluid sequence, and Faithful ends up pulling the kick left. But this dude has an absolute cannon of a leg. You're not worried about the power at all. He is blasting everything from, I've heard of a 70-yarder going through at practice. I know that's kind of the goal for him in a pro game that he's talked about all throughout his career.
That's insane.
But remember, he's 36 years old, so the window to accomplish all of this might be very small.
And he's from England.
He is from England.
And he came over here to play soccer?
He played soccer.
Our football or their football?
He played European football, even as an older player at Florida Tech. Okay, and then he was going to play football at Florida Tech until their program folded after he had committed. So here comes Colorado State Pueblo. So he ends up kicking for, I think, two seasons at this Division II school, but comes to an open tryout, blasts a 60-plus yard field goal, and you're turning Chris Jones' head, obviously.
Well, Chris Jones is known for finding players. So if at the halfway point of the season, Faithful is still the kicker and he's still turning heads, that's going to be another feather in the cap for Chris Jones. Because when they drafted him,
Second overall.
I was like, are you joking? Like, is this, what are you talking about? He's like, no. You were like, no, this is a real guy. Like, he might be able to kick. So, all right.
Yeah, second overall in the global draft, which has proven to be an absolute crapshoot. And you need to dress a global player. A kicker's a pretty good spot to have that. It makes sense. We'll see if he can keep it between the wickets, because, again, the distance is not an issue.
Okay, I know you got to get home to watch the Blazers here. 12:30 tomorrow you're on?
Yeah, 12:30, the countdown show. We're going to hear from Evan Dom from the Elks. We'll get a kind of an update on everything you need to know heading into the regular season opener on June 11th. But, yeah, it'll be a good one tomorrow.
Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins is brought to you by James H. Brown and Associates, Alberta Injury Lawyers, the heavy hitters of injury law.
All right. Great to have Brendan Escott stopping by. He has the countdown to kickoff at 12:30 tomorrow. The game is at 2. Dave Campbell, Morley Scott, Blake Dermott, David Bowles, also part of our broadcast crew. 2 o'clock game, Elks home to the Blue Bombers in the preseason. 780-496-0063. We were having some fun tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The no longer with us Edmonton minor pro sports team that you miss the most and or you might have a story about. What do we have coming in, Kellen?
Mm-hmm. Toad and Cowtown Bob both mentioning the same team here in Cowtown Bob. This is a little bit more lengthy. I'll get into it after naming the team. Edmonton Flyers, the Edmonton Flyers hockey team. And Cowtown Bob also adds that the Edmonton Flyers were a pro hockey team in the 50s and 60s, affiliated with the Red Wings. And he also misses the Edmonton Monarchs. They were a senior hockey team who played in the Western Canada League with such teams as the Calgary Stampeders and Saskatoon Quakers. They played in the Edmonton Gardens, but it all ended when the Alberta Oilers came to town in the WHA. They played good hockey with a few players that had played in the NHL. It was in the 60s and early 70s.
I was hoping we'd get some teams going back like that, because the furthest back I went was the Drillers to 1979. Mm-hmm. I obviously know of the Edmonton Flyers, don't have as much detail on them as Cowtown Bob does, so that's pretty cool. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yoga Joe texting.
Yoga Joe. What a name. That's awesome.
He's texting it and saying, when affiliated to the Angels, Reggie Jackson was in Edmonton for a game.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of guys would have come through. But he played for the Trappers for a game then, did he? Must have been a rehab from an injury or something.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting, for sure. And one more from Coach Gator here. Says, the Trappers were the best, going to the old park and relaxing and watching the odd doubleheader. That's from Coach Gator.
All right, appreciate that. I'm sure we'll have more of those as we move along tonight. Mooner might have some memories as well, being a guy who grew up in Edmonton. He's coming up next. We'll talk some Oilers and Memorial Cup with him as well. Hope you're having a great Friday night. It's Inside Sports on 630 Chet.
Hi. Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.